Welcome back to the Florida Travel Fanatics Podcast. I'm Clark.
I'm Heather.
And this is episode 46, How to Enjoy Florida's Off-the-Beaten-Path Beaches, Part 2.
Say that three times fast.
Three times real fast.
A shout out to our new listeners since the last episode. Hamburg, Germany, Port Richey, Florida, Claremont, Florida, Baden-Württemberg, Germany, Cassopolis, Michigan, Wappingers Falls, New York, Tingsboro, Massachusetts, Syracuse, New York, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, Santa Rosa, California, Greenwich, Connecticut, Montreal, Canada, Ocala, Florida, Blue Ridge, Virginia, Leeds in the UK, Yucaipa, California, and Boynton Beach, Florida. Thank you for listening.
So what things have we done recently? We always like to share the activities that we've done in Florida, things we're doing, because we're doing it with you. I recently went to the Valspar PGA Tour golf tournament with one of our nephews, one of our adult nephews, and that was a great experience. We enjoyed that. I go almost every year. It was a little rainy Saturday morning, so we decided to go on Sunday instead. It's a really nice tournament. One of my favorite things about it is that the Frenchie's restaurant takes over the swimming pool area at the resort, and they make it into like a pool bar, like a pool restaurant. So they have their grouper nuggets and fries and all their wonderful food and drinks there, their ceviche and all that. It's kind of cool to see them take over a pool area. That's a fun spot there. Josh Winery has a wine garden, which is nice. We were able to take advantage of I'm a Navy veteran. They have a program on the PGA Tour called Birdies for the Brave. It's different for every tournament, but we paid $30. You can get two tickets, $30 a piece versus they're $80 normally at the door. For folks that are on active duty or retired military or reservist, their tickets are zero. They don't cost anything. And different PGA Tour events, they have, depending on the sponsorship, they'll have a food tent. Pinch a Penny Pool Company, I'll give them a shout out. And we actually use their stuff in our pool. I like their pool chemicals. They're expensive, but they work great. So you get what you pay for. And they sponsor a really great tent or a little pavilion actually on the fourth hole, which was a par three, which was a lot of fun to watch. And we had all the Marco's pizza and ice cream and Mick Ultra we could consume. So we consumed a reasonable amount of that in about 3 hours watching golf. That was fun. So I was there. I was actually talking to somebody who has been to the PGA Tour event over in Orlando at Arnold Palmer's course at Bay Hill. He said they have even a larger tent there for the veterans, but it's actually not. It's on a fairway. It's not in quite as good of a location, but we're definitely going to go try that next year. I've been wanting to go to that tournament anyway, and knowing they've got a good veterans tent makes it that much easier for us. So if you know somebody who's a veteran or active duty, you might suggest they son, daughter, spouse, uncle, somebody, let them know about it, and you can go and see it and enjoy it for free. We also went to the Tampa Bay Air Show, which kind of was a train wreck. We made the mistake of getting there late, and the traffic was terrible. We couldn't even get in. We had to park. We parked off-site. We walked 2 miles off-site and into the base, only to find out we were still 2 mile walk from the flight line with an hour to go on the show. So we just took our chairs, plopped down on the grass where we were, and did get to see some aircraft. It was pretty neat, B-1 bomber and all that. The takeaway from that is, this is bad for us for leaving late for an air show. That's probably the worst thing you can do. Go as early as you possibly can. If you've got a bike rack and got bikes, take bikes with you, because if the base fills up or the site where the show fills up, like it happened to us, people were able to ride in very easily. We're trying to walk 4 miles in and out. It just takes too long, and it just was a long walk. So get there early and do it. Now, this air show, they do have a $40 VIP seat that you can get, which we're going to get those next year to get some video and pictures to share with you on our channels. But I'm watching that very closely. They have not announced the date or tickets for next year for 2025, but we'll let you know when those come out.
It was an absolutely stunning weekend, and it was also a holiday weekend.
It was Easter weekend, yeah.
Might have something to do with it, but all those points are really valid.
Well, and Friday was Good Friday. There were people there, but Saturday the base was just packed with people. I mean, it's great that so many people came out, but it was really chaos. We should have gone much, much earlier. Rookie mistake there.
And there has been a gap. The last time we saw it was 2023. Right?
2022.
Yes, yeah.
They had the base construction.
There was a gap. There was a gap. So.
Yeah, so that was, we got to see aircraft. It was fun. The Thunderbirds were pretty neat. I mean, the pilots there, the skill of those people is unbelievable. So that's a pretty cool thing. And got to see some World War II aircraft. They actually did a new old where they took a World War II aircraft and flew it with an F-18. And it was neat to see the two of them flying together, kind of the World War II era, the modern era. That was pretty cool. Afterwards, we were hot and tired and sweaty and thirsty. So we went to Cigar City Brewing in Tampa and saved the day. Believe it or not, as long as we've lived in Tampa, I've never actually been to the actual brewery. Cigar City. City is one of our favorite beers here in the Tampa Bay area. And really a nice place. They have excellent beer and food there. It's pretty common for craft breweries when you go onto their facilities. They can only distribute bottle and can, and why do they distribute so many beers? So I think Cigar City has four or five that they distribute. But they do this in Florida, and Florida Avenue Brewing does this. When you're in their brewery, they've got ones that they just make in limited amounts and have them on tap only at the restaurant. So if you're a fan of a particular beer or cider, if you go to one of their place, you'll get some ones that they you just won't get anywhere else. So it's fun to taste new beers that you've never tried from your favorite brewery. We did that. And we love Cigar City Brewing, so it's a great place. So we did put some pictures. I put some pictures and a little bit of video up on our Instagram page so you can see what it looks like. So they also can some of the beers that you can take home, and you can always get a growler filled as well. We brought ended up bringing a growler home from that. But highly recommend. And that's not far from the airport, by the way, in Tampa.
And if you don't know what a growler is, it's just a big jug.
Big glass or metal bottle. 64-ounce thing full of beer. Yeah, growler.
Exactly.
Sounds growler.
Yes, exactly. Yes. We had talked previously about Easter Sunday service at Raymond James with Grace Family Church. They have 8 campuses around the Tampa Bay area. And instead of each campus having their own Easter service, everyone came to Raymond James Stadium where the Buccaneers play. And they had an amazing church service for Easter Sunday with 23,500 people. That was a huge amount of people. There were a lot of people on the field. But if you looked around, and you can see some of this on Instagram, we posted some pictures, the whole bottom sections were completely full, except behind the stage. But it was massive, and it was so enjoyable. The weather, absolutely beautiful. I thought it was just amazing how even just enough cloud cover to come over to keep us all cool. Beautiful, beautiful day, and amazing day for Tampa Bay.
Yeah, one of my favorite parts was there's 8 different campuses, and each campus has its own pastor, and they had this goofy race where they put them in the clear bubble things, and they run around bumping into each other. So our campus pastor is a little bit older, and he didn't do as well as the younger guys, which is what probably would have happened to us too. But it was a lot of fun, and I know for a fact that the worship and tech teams worked for like 10 hours the day before to rehearse and get everything set up, and it was Sunday was. All weekend was great. So the air show was great. Yes. And we tailgated. We had bacon and eggs and other fun things. It was a good time. Yeah. Definitely a unique way to do Sunday, but check Easter Sunday, but definitely check our Instagram for that.
In this episode's Florida Travel News, we've talked about the Michelin Guide. We've talked about Michelin stars in Florida with the restaurants. But I wanted to talk a little bit about the James Beard Awards. The James Beard Awards are the most prestigious award that you can have for culinary achievement. And this isn't specifically for a restaurant. This is specifically for the chefs. So just a little background. James Beard was an American chef. He was a cookbook author, teacher, television personality. And he actually helped pioneer some of the television cooking shows. He taught at the James Beard Cooking School in New York City. He had one in Seaside, Oregon. He did lots of lectures, and he just really emphasized American cooking prepared with fresh, wholesome American ingredients, so much like what we're doing now, farm to table. That was James Beard way back. So all of the things that James Beard was so enthusiastic about, they decided to do his foundation does an annual award, and it's presented by the James Beard Foundation, and it's to recognize chefs, restaurateurs, authors, journalists in the United States that are concentrating on culinary. So we have some of the nominees in Florida. They scheduled the actual announcement of the awardees in right around May 5th, and that's James Beard's birthday. He did pass away in the 90s, I believe. So I'd have to double check that. But anyway, they started it in 1991. They put together the foundation, and they've been doing it since then with only really a gaps during COVID in, the 2021 range. But anyway, let's go on. A few of the Florida nominees are New Best Restaurant, which is Kaya in Orlando, Florida. Outstanding Bakeries, Zach the Baker in Miami, Florida. The Outstanding Pastry Chef or Baker, Jesus Brezon and Manuel Brezon, and that's Caracas Bakery in Miami as well. Outstanding Wine and Other Beverage Programs, that's Macalina, and that's in Miami. outstanding bar is Webb's City Cellar, and that's in St. Pete. And we have not been to that, so that would be fun to go to St. Petersburg and try that place out. They also have regional awards, and the best chef for the South, or actually two chefs, is Jennifer and Mark Burden, and they are Cadence in Orlando. Clay Conley for Buchan in Palm Beach. Tristan Epps for Ocean Social in Miami. And Henry Mosso for Kabuki Sushi in Orlando. So that's just a little bit, and you can go to the jamesbeard.org if you want to see more of that. And we'll just share some of the award winners in our episodes in May.
So even being nominated is a big deal for the show. It's kind of like being Grammy nominated or Oscar nominated.
It's actually considered like the culinary Oscars.
Yeah.
They have used that phrase.
And you were telling me too, so a Michelin star, a restaurant can lose a Michelin star. It's possible. But the Beard Award, you said, is really for life. It's like, it's the chef's recognition, not the restaurant.
Right. It's the chef's recognition. And there is a chef in Virginia. His name is Patrick O'Connell, that he has 5 James Beard Awards. He's been with.
Oh, you can get more than one. Okay.
Yes, you can get more than one. So, and they don't stack up like the stars do. It's just, you know, cumulative. It's like your Oscars.
It's like an MVP, most valuable chef, most valuable player of the culinary arts.
So I just think it's pretty interesting that, I mean, there are tons of them all over the country, but it's just fun to see the ones that are in Florida.
I had never heard of it until we went to a restaurant in Baltimore, Charleston in Baltimore. And they had a woman there who was a Beard winner or Beard nominated. And the food was unbelievable. Yeah. We did an anniversary dinner, like a 5-course tasting with wine pairing. And it was really amazing. I think it was $350. It was worth every penny. But yeah, James Beard Award for the win. There's a new Brightline station that has been announced. This is the first one since they completed the new Brightline station at the Orlando airport. The city of Stewart is going to get a station. It's the first edition. And since the Orlando, it's also the northernmost station above West Palm Beach. So basically West Palm Beach and above that is a gap. There's no stations between there and Orlando. So they're filling those in over time. The city of Stewart bid, they had competed basically against 2 other bids that were competing bids in Fort Pierce, and the city of Stewart won. Apparently a lot of it comes down to funding. So the county and the city, so the county gave the land to the city for the station. It's a 2.5-acre parking lot currently. The city's leasing it to Brightline for $1 for 80 years. That's a pretty good lease. I guess they legally retain ownership. So that will probably be done in late 2026. That's a big boost in tourism for those towns, and that's part of the Space Coast. So that lets people come into that area really easily. One of the things that kind of chagrins the people that are north of West Palm Beach up until now is they see the Brightline train going through and bringing people through, but people don't get off because there's no station. So the cities really see this as an economic boom for tourism because it'll make it so much easier for people to come into their area. And Stewart's really a nice town. It's also the home of a TV show I used to watch called A Project Dreamboat, where they've got a bunch of boat yards there where they do custom boat work, custom boat builds. So it's a pretty neat area in Stewart. So, and that's at the southern tip of Jensen Island. So then there'll be more stations over time, and eventually the stations will all come all the way through Disney, Universal, and over to Tampa. Aeromexico, which is the airline of Mexico, has announced a new direct flight service from Mexico City to Tampa to start on July 1st. And that's the first time it's happened in 30 years. It's back. It's a big win for Tampa, but apparently there's a lot of people, no surprise, a lot of people that are Mexican that live in the Tampa Bay area, and they want to be able to travel to Mexico directly. The estimated financial impact on tourism in the Tampa Bay area is $70 million a year, which is crazy. Just that many more people make it that much easier to come in and out of the Tampa Bay area. And Aeromexico has already been flying to Orlando and Miami. No surprise there. It's nice to see Tampa get added to that list.
The next one I'm really excited about.
Yeah, this is a good one for us personally. So Breeze Airways just announced flights to Pensacola directly from Tampa currently, starting July 1st with flights twice a week starting at $59. Yeehaw. It's a 7-hour drive and we can take a $59 flight. It costs us $140 in gas to go back and forth. If the two of us can fly each way for $59, we're pretty close.
And right now, the only direct from Tampa to Pensacola is Silver.
Southwest isn't doing it yet. Yeah. There are some limitations. They do only fly on Friday and Monday, which is kind of interesting because it lets you, if you want to do a long weekend, say in Pensacola, or you want to come down to Tampa from Pensacola, you could do a Friday to Monday weekend or fly Monday to Friday, and you have a week of days there, the weekdays. It's a little little bit limiting, but certainly another option. They, like a lot of the discount carriers or all the discount carriers, they do upcharge for carry-on bags, checked bags, like the other airlines. One of the nice things too, all the planes are all a new, relatively new Airbus A220. There's been a lot of drama in the media about Boeing lately, and some people think maybe the Airbus is a safer plane. We won't get too far into that. The cool thing is the seats are 2x2, so there's no middle seats. They're basically aisle, window, an aisle, and then an aisle and a window. So you don't have to even worry about the middle seat shuffle that you try to avoid on other flights, which is nice. There's also a Pensacola flight to and from Norfolk, Virginia. A Breeze also flies into Mobile, Alabama from Providence, Rhode Island, and Orlando. If you're looking to make a trip to the Panhandle, Mobile is very close to Florida, and that could be an easy way for you to get a direct flight. They also fly to Sarasota, Bradenton, Palm Beach, Vero Beach, Jacksonville, and there are many flights to Orlando, Fort Myers, and lots of flights to Tampa as well, including Orange County, California, and Las Vegas. So I think the Orlando, Fort Myers, and Tampa flies to most of the cities that are Breeze around the eastern half of the country, and those are like the cities like North. It's not like D.C. It's more like Norfolk or smaller towns. So the small regional airports, a lot of people prefer those. They're just so much easier to get in and out of and less traveled. And that's where a lot of the discount carriers like Breeze and Allegiant work out of, because the routes are open.
Yeah, I've really enjoyed any time I've flown into a regional airport. I've done St. Pete, and I've done Pensacola, and I've even flown in from Fort Wayne, Indiana they're so nice. The little ones are
easy,
so
airports.
Nice.
Yeah, business travelers, if you travel a lot, you'll take a small regional any day over a major airport, anything other than Atlanta or even Orlando, just in terms of size. I flew back from Knoxville. I went up to Knoxville for a University of Tennessee football game last year. That was the Bama game where Tennessee won, and flying in and out of St. Pete Clearwater Airport was just a piece of cake, just in and out directly from Knoxville, which is not an easy place to get to. So that's nice to have.
And in this episode's Florida Travel Tips, we just wanted to let you know that the 10th annual Tampa Bay Kids Triathlon is coming up on April 20th. It's at Busch Gardens Adventure Island Water Park, and kids 6 to 14 can participate. It's a really short triathlon, complete with a lazy river swim, and it looks like a lot of fun. The entry fee is $55, and there are still 50 spots available the last time we checked. Country star Kenny Chesney starts his summer concert tour in Tampa at Raymond James Stadium on Saturday, April 20th as well. And it's going to be a busy day with Zach Brown, Megan Maroney, and Uncle Cracker. He's also playing in Hollywood, Florida, near Fort Lauderdale at the Hard Rock Casino on Thursday, May 16th. And that's a really nice indoor venue with about 7,000 seats. So if you're not really in the mood for an outdoor concert, consider going to Fort Lauderdale. We took a niece to Clark took a niece to see Guns N' Roses there play a couple years ago.
It's a really nice venue. Yeah, it's in the casino. Good restaurants too. We got a nice dinner before we went.
And speaking of mega country stars, Chris Stapleton is performing in 3 Florida cities in May. Thursday, May 9th in West Palm Beach at the I Think Financial Amphitheater. Friday, May 10th in Tampa at the Mid-Florida Credit Union Amphitheater. And both the shows include Grace Potter and Nikki Lane. The next day, Saturday, May 11th, he's in Jacksonville at Everbank Stadium with George Strait and Little Big Town.
I think I'd rather see George Strait and Little Big Town, as much as Grace Potter, I'm sure, was great. But
Grace Potter has done a lot of features with Kenny Chesney.
Oh, okay, yeah, that's right.
She does a lot of those. Heather's
the country fan of our relationship.
I'm not sure about that.
Yeah,
now.
You are.
I'm
getting there, though.
Country.
I'll tell you, Chris Stapleton, man, and Kenny Chesney and some other bands, I'm getting into it a little bit more. But there's lots of good options. And those are typically the cities that are on tours. Tampa, Orlando, Jacksonville, Miami.
I mean, I definitely opt for an indoor
venue
during the summer, because you either have to mess around with rain or you have to just the general heat is a factor.
Yeah, I think the sound's better indoors too, personally. Mm-hmm. But I have been at the I Think Financial Amphitheater in West Palm Beach. I saw Dave Matthews there, and that's a nice venue there.
The 3rd annual Space Coast Burger Battle is coming up on Saturday and Sunday, May 18th and 19th in Wickham Park in Melbourne, Florida. The tickets are only $7 at the gate, and they're free for 10 kids 10 and under. You'll be able to buy burgers and desserts for $5 or less, and there will be a wide variety of locally brewed craft beers. I can't think of anything better than burger and a beer.
Burger and a beer.
There will be games including a foam party, axe throwing, face painting, and live music.
Moving on to the main topic in this episode, let's talk more about the off-the-beaten-path beaches in Florida. So our podcasters, we really focus on travel experiences in Florida that most people just don't know about. Or part of our inspiration for all this is that we came here, we moved here, and there's so many things we just didn't know about, and we were sharing them with people, even people that live here. And they were like, wow, you guys really should be on social media and start talking about this stuff because you know so much about it. Something we just really, really love. And last episode, we started off to do this off-the-beaten-path beaches, and there's so many that we decided to do a second episode. And actually, after recording this one, there's enough to do another one. We're going to do a third one,
not next time.
We're going to save it. But as I was going through beaches, I'm like, we're going to run out of time. We try to keep our episodes under 30 minutes, and I'm looking right now, we're at 20 already, so I'm on my recorder, so we're going to try to keep it to 30 minutes. But there's so many great beaches, and what we want to do going through this list again for the second episode is the beaches are all great. So you can say things like pristine and nice and pretty and, you know, quaint,
the travel
whatever.
Brochure.
The travel brochure, Chamber of Commerce kind of thing. So what we really want to do is give you a list of ideas, and then we'll call out things that are unique or different, or what's the most thing that that beach is kind of the best known for, or things that in some cases we have done and seen ourselves, and just give you an idea of like, hey, if you like this, you might like this. Like if you like surfing, Cocoa Beach or Melbourne are the best. So that kind of thing. So let's go ahead and dive into that. So again, we'll go from the northeast around clockwise around this east coast up the west coast out to the panhandle, just like we did in last episode. So we talked last time about the Amelia Island. That's the northernmost part of the east coast. We talked about Fernandina Beach, but we wanted to drill down a little bit and did some research and found out that North Beach Park is the quietest beach in that area. And Amelia Island beaches are pretty unspoiled and not overrun. You know, it's not a big beach town, but it's a nice area. But that's an area, if you're looking for a really quiet area, that's a great beach to go to.
Boneyard Beach is near Jacksonville and part of Big Talbot Island State Park. And it's called Boneyard Beach because it's a home to many large driftwood trees that give it a boneyard appearance. It is very cool looking. I just love the idea. It's a hike to get to, and it's a great place for taking pictures. Some of the trees still have the roots that are actually part of preserving the shoreline and reducing beach erosion. So if you like to hike and you want to have a nice quiet beach, sandy beach, but with basically driftwood sculptures around you, that's going to be the beach for you.
Near St. Augustine is Volano Beach, where you can surf fish, drive on the beach, and it's also dog friendly, which is nice. Some beach towns have a small area for dogs. Some cities have the whole beach is dog friendly. This one is. So if you're looking for a dog beach town, this is a good one for you. This was once the favorite beach for the guests at Henry Flagler's incredible hotel in St. Augustine, built back in the 1880s, and that's now part of the campus of Flagler College. That's pretty neat. But there's some other things, cool things to do in Volano Beach. It's a really nice area. Moving south down to the Space Coast, Cocoa Beach and Melbourne Beach are both really nice beach towns, and they're best known for being the surfing capital of Florida. We personally love Cocoa Beach. We've spent time there, and one of our favorite things to do is go out on the pier, have a drink, and watch the surfers, which are typically, in many cases, surfing really close to the pier. So it's like a surfing show, and you're not very far away. You can get some great pictures. It's really a neat area. There's a restaurant and bar you can sit out there and enjoy it. It's a pretty cool spot.
When you're at Cocoa Beach, also check out the enormous Ron John Surf Shop. I mean,
it's worth it.
It's massive.
And beach towns across the country, across the world, are full of towel places to get towels and, you know, sunscreen. You think, okay, whatever. It's a beach shop, but this place is really something special. They've got wood surfboards in there, historic things. They did recently close down the surfboard museum there, which hopefully they'll reopen that. But the shop, the 20,000 square feet of this place is really something to see, and there's some neat things in there. So
it's just a nice, cool place to wander too. If you've been on the beach here a little bit, you know, and they don't care about a little bit of sand coming in.
Yeah, they used to. It's a beach town. Vero Beach is a beach town and beach that's really nice. We made a trip there a few years ago for a burger and brews festival. We're also following one of our favorite cover bands. There's a Kenny Chesney tribute band called Pirate Flag that we went to see down there. But we had small burgers, sliders, and beer. That was a lot of fun. And Vero Beach is one of those, it's like Cocoa Beach. It's really kind of has an unspoiled feel to it. It's just not that developed. It's the perfect thing of there's some beachside restaurants and bars, but it's not crazy and overrun with people. So definitely check out Vero Beach.
A really nice beach town located between Jupiter and West Palm Beach is Juneau Beach. May through October, Juneau Beach is the densest sea turtle nesting ground in the world. The Loggerhead Marine Center is a working sea turtle hospital and hosts turtle walks on the beach. They will go out and help scout for where the eggs are hatching. They put
chicken wire,
little fences around them.
Keep birds from eating the eggs.
Right.
Isn't that what they do?
So nearby Juneau Dunes Recreational is a 569-acre preserve where you can hike or paddle. It's just a really, really authentic beach area. And that's, and the turtle thing is totally fascinates me. So
yeah, we love sea turtles. I love that. We have seen turtles scuba diving and they're just such incredible creatures. They're just, they kind of lumber around and swim around. They're just neat. They get pretty big too.
I have a sea turtle. Her name is Maisie.
Maisie, that's right.
And she does travel around the Keys.
She hangs around Key West. Yeah, you can, you know, one of those. I got Heather this for Christmas one year. This one of those, like, they give you a bracelet and they give you the name of one. They're tagged, so they follow them.
And you can get online and
see where's Maisie.
Hey, that's a really great, a great way to support the sea turtles and also a fun little gift for somebody.
Yeah, it'd be a great gift for kids. You know, elementary age or any age really for birthday or Christmas or something, give them, and then they can teach them more awareness about animal conservation, those kinds of things.
Delray Beach is another excellent beach and beach town located between Boca Raton and West Palm Beach. We have some family friends who snowbird there from Connecticut every year. We've been down to see them frequently. It's definitely a nice place. We want to spend more time.
In Key West is Zachary Taylor State Park. It's located on the west side of Key West. So we mentioned this in our last episode, but the Keys aren't known for beaches. They don't have a lot. So the ones that are there that are good, people really enjoy them, and they're fairly well known, at least locally. It's really nice. They actually have yoga there on the beach on certain days. We'll put the link to their website to see when they're doing yoga there or other places around Key West if you're into that. We did yoga on the beach in Miami Beach once. That was a lot of fun with one of our daughters. There is a historic fort there, and of course the beaches are really, really nice. Note that this is not Fort Jefferson. So this is Zachary Taylor State Park. Fort Jefferson is actually 70 miles to the west in the Dry Tortugas. So there was a fort, Fort Zachary Taylor at Key West, and then there was the Fort Jefferson out on Dry Tortugas. This is in the era when they were worried about sailing ships and they had large cannons and things, but a very cool place to visit. And that just happens to be where the best beach in Key West is. Moving over to the southern end of the Gulf Coast is Marco Island, just below Naples. It's really a nice enclave. Marco Island Public Beach is nice, and Tiger Tail Beach is great. Marco Island Beach is more developed with condos and restaurants and bars. Tiger Tail Beach, however, is very unspoiled. It has a lagoon and a wildlife preservation area near the beach.
Fort DeSoto Park is located at the very southern tip of Pinellas Peninsula at the mouth of Tampa Bay. The beach there is really beautiful and the park is huge, very popular for camping, boating, and jet skiing. You can also explore the ruins of Fort DeSoto and it's a good spot for snorkeling as well. We've really enjoyed time on Sand Key Beach, which is just south of Clearwater. It's great on a crowded weekend. You just kind of go beyond Clearwater and over the bridge and you can get to Sand Key. We stayed at the Marriott Sand Key Resort twice back to back in the mid 2000s with our kids. We had a great time. Really our first taste of being in Tampa and, you know, exploring some of the areas that we now live in.
Yeah, there still is a Columbia's there is. Restaurant mm-hmm. still there. Yeah, we went over there the other day. Our kids are now grown. One of the nice things about that resort, I think they still have the kids club there. And that was when our kids were 9, 10, 11, put them in the kids club. Mom and dad can go on a date lunch or take a nap or something, just have some quiet time. But that's a great spot. And Sand Key is just close enough to Clearwater that you can go there and enjoy it, go to the pier 60 every night and then come back.
And they have a trolley that does that.
That's right. They go back and forth. We rode the trolley. That was fun to do that. So if you're looking for a spot, like I want to be near Clearwater, but I don't want to be quite as much crowds or want a little quieter, that check out Sand Key. It's a nice area.
And the Columbia restaurant is on a little boardwalk. There's a fun little breakfast spot that's still there. Dunkin' Donuts,
a few
little shops, yeah. But you can get into Clearwater very easily.
Yeah, that's on the intercoastal, which isn't bad because you can still go across the street to the beach. And we actually did a jet ski. We rented jet skis one day on the intercoastal there. That was fun. And nice not to be in the open ocean with all the waves too, if you're a newbie jet ski beginner, which we were for sure. So along the nature coast, which starts above Tampa, it's not known for beaches. It's generally mangroves, and that's part of what makes the nature coast what it is. It's more about hiking and kayaking. But there are a couple beaches up there. One is called Fort Island Beach, and that's just located just west of Crystal River, probably an hour and a half from Tampa, depending on where in Tampa you start from. You kind of drive through some mangroves, you end up in this little nice little beach area. That's one of those ones a lot of people just don't know about, that one. So if you're up in the Crystal River area and you want to go to the beach, go check out Fort Island Beach State Park. Moving further around to more the panhandle side, over in the Forgotten Coast is a beautiful area called Cape San Blas, B-L-A-S, which is just west of St. George Island, which we talked about in our last episode. Not easy to get there, but the harder it is to get there, the more unspoiled the beach is and the less development there is, which is neat. Just west of there, just west of Cape San Blas, is Mexico Beach. That's another really quiet, small beach town with a lot of character. And these are just little beach towns. And if you go there and you feel like your blood pressure just drops. It's just so relaxed and chilled out, and you're just like, oh, I just want to hang out here for a few days and just eat some seafood and sleep and go to the beach and rest and just enjoy nature.
If you are a fan of the 30A life, which we've talked about in some of our other episodes, Rosemary Beach, which is part of the larger Santa Rosa Beach area, this is one of my favorites. It's such a beautiful town. We're getting into the Gulf beaches that are white sand, sugary sand, much like we see in Clearwater, but somehow they're just calmer. It's just a very relaxed, almost a state of mind in Rosemary Beach.
Yeah, and that's near Seaside. We've talked about Seaside before, where they filmed the Truman Show. Mm-hmm. And there is a whole 30A lifestyle that we're going to do a trip later this year and do a podcast episode and a YouTube video on the 30A area. It's really a unique, amazing section of the panhandle that most people in Florida just don't know about. And this is one, if you're like, we want to go someplace really nice, but something new or different, that area in the right time of year is unbelievable.
I think you can be a not beach person and enjoy Rosemary because the scenery is just so beautiful. It's just a very calm, gorgeous beach area. The towns are beautiful. It's calm. I think for somebody from up north, it would probably compare to the Hamptons, wouldn't you say?
It definitely has that feel to it.
It just has this feel.
There's a feel to it that's just really relaxed and really, really nice upscale area, Seaside especially, and that whole area is just unique. And they call it 30A life because it is a lifestyle place. A lot of people from the southeastern U.S., Nashville, Atlanta, places can drive down to that part of the panhandle, and they come down there, and a lot of people own second properties and rental homes down there. It's a really, really great area.
Along 30A, you'll find Grayton Beach, and that's located halfway between Destin and Panama City. And that they have a great brewery there. Yeah,
we have some of their beer in our fridge. We have the classic refrigerator in our garage, and there is one of their pale ales in there. And one of our daughters was drinking one of their. There's a type of beer called a Gose, which is G-O-S-E, which is like a sour, and she was drinking one the other day from the Grayton Beach Brewery.
Well, we still have more beaches to talk about. We mentioned that. So look for a part three in this series to come out in the near future. It won't be the next one because we really want to talk about the early season hurricane forecast that we've just gotten some information about.
Yeah. If you live in Florida, you know there's some beaches we have not talked about yet. So I'm not going to mention them and spoil it. But those of you that know your beaches, if you live in an area, you're like, you haven't mentioned such and such. We're going to get to that in the third. Maybe there'll be a fourth. Or yeah, if you feel like we missed one, email us or DM us on Instagram and tell us, hey, you should talk about this town. Or
if you want to share it,
we're happy to. Yeah, we'll take all the suggestions, especially for those of you that live in those areas and have some special knowledge. Because about 20% of you are Floridians and live here at least summer all of the year. So we'll talk about the hurricane predictions for this year. Heather touched on that the next episode. And there's actually a new color version of the cone of uncertainty. Dun, dun, dun. That we'll talk about that as well. So the forecast is interesting. We won't spoil it, but it's an early forecast. We'll see what comes this summer, but we'll cover that because that will potentially affect your trip planning for late summer and early fall. As always, the details will be in the episode description. Check us out on our YouTube channel, Florida Travel Fanatics, and feel free to contact us via Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, or email at contact@floridatravelfanatics.com. And you can also join our private Facebook group and join our newsletter mailing list where we put content out that we don't publish anywhere else.
We hope you've enjoyed this episode, and we hope we've given you some good ideas about how you can enjoy Florida's lesser-known, off-beaten-path beaches.
Thanks for listening.
Sunny days ahead.